look easy. I'm thinking hard right now, 'cause I know that you want me from the inside out. You got me speechless. I'm under my mouth. I was keeping you secret, but the word got out. You're fast, then you're slow. Why you cold, then you fool? You let me on now. Till your walls come down. Yes, then you know, but I'm not letting go. Oh, oh. I'll be your contradiction.
Hello, you're listening to the Talking Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is our summer 2020 anime season reviews, part one of two. We're going to go through the shows that we watched this season, let you guys know what we think about them, and all that good stuff. You excited?
Yes.
I know early on, I don't know if it was about the four-episode mark-ish, you didn't sound too positive on this season. Have you changed your mind? Did things pan out for you? You don't have to mention specific shows, but was it a good season for you?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I think it was like probably a couple shows that were kind of the, every week I need to watch this. ReZero, of course, every week have to watch it on the day of.
There was a couple that I had a lot of fun watching, but yeah.
I think a couple of them kind of started panning out well. There was a couple that were big letdowns. One of them's in this particular episode of reviews, but yeah, I was disappointed that Decadence didn't become a Crossange. I don't think it got to those levels at all.
Yeah,
Crossange will remain to be a unique, special snowflake, like every single one of the other animes. No, now I wouldn't really say snowflake. It's more like a chaotic cluster of ice. And everything else is a snowflake.
I guess.
Like everybody else. But yeah, from otakuspirit.com, that's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old, great community forum links at the top, social media links on the right side, and all that good stuff. And also a review button up there where you can find all of our reviews. We pretty much try to watch as many, if not all, shows in every season. It doesn't always pan out because there's certain ones that are kind of like, yeah, that's not really a show. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we try to watch everything. And this particular episode, we'll be covering Apare Ranman. Yes, that finally ended. Decadence, The God of High School, The Misfit, Demon King Academy, Peter Grill and the Philosopher's Time, My Teen Romantic Comedy Snafu Climax, ReZero Second Season, and Sword Art Online Alicization War of Underworld Part 2. So yes, lots of interesting stuff in there. We can talk about this episode. It's kind of a whammy episode. Like everything kind of started and ending, so... getting the reviews put together kind of clustered everything in the very beginning, but look forward to the second part too. But I guess we can jump right into it. You ready?
Sure, let's do it.
Kick things off with Apare Ranma. This one was streaming on Funimation, ran for 13 episodes. Of course, it was originally starting way back in spring, but of course the COVID delays, we finally got it concluding with this particular season. Ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio PA Works. It is an original. These genres are comedy and historical. And this one follows a guy named... Right off the bat, it follows Kosame, who is a Japanese man that is kind of tasked with taking care of a guy named Apare, who is kind of a... He's a little bit of an oddball. He likes to tinker with things. He's causing a little bit of trouble, so he's going to end up being put in jail. Well, Apare, being a little bit of a brainiac himself, decides to break out of jail... jump into a boat that he made himself and decide that he wanted to cross the ocean. And Kosame, thinking that he's going to bring, you know, dishonor to his family and he's going to end up getting in trouble, tries to stop Apare and ends up on the boat with him traveling across the ocean. Of course, they didn't make it all the way. They end up getting stranded in the ocean. But thankfully, a passing by boat manages to actually run into them and take them back to the mainland of the United States. over on the West Coast, obviously. From there, come to find out there's a cross-country race that's going on. There's a race going from the West Coast all the way up to New York. And Apare decides to join that race and prove that his new kind of creation will beat everybody else's, and starts crafting his own vehicle. Well, of course, the likes of every single motor vehicle company that are not BMW and not Ford and not Chevy and all them. What was it? I should have wrote down all the names. There's like all these really weird names.
BMW instead of...
Yeah, BMW sounds right.
There was, instead of General Motors, there was a General Engines or something like that.
Yeah.
It was just
General
a whole
Machines,
bunch of
probably.
Yeah, General Machines.
I think it was still GM, just not General Motors. But yeah, they start Apare trying to create a vehicle. Kasami, of course, wants to go back home because he's already kind of wed to a fiance that he never met and wants to get back home to his family. Whereas Apare is kind of like, no, I want to do this. I'm going to create a vehicle and race. And so Kasami kind of ends up going along with it because he figures the prize money will actually get him enough money to actually cross the ocean, even though at that point he needs to travel back to the West Coast to get on a boat to go back to Japan. Because it's kind of like a, you know, turn of the century kind of stuff. You got the, you know, like almost Wild West feel to it. Very boom of industrial season kind of thing. So it's way kind of back in the day before flight and everything. Well, they kind of mentioned a little bit about flight at the very end of it, but yeah, it's a little ways back there. The kind of other things, like, with that whole kind of Wild West feeling to it, you do have, you know, different kind of bandits and stuff involved with it. One big one being Guilty Cigar. The weirdest names. They were like the Seven, was it?
1,007,
something like that.
1,003.
Which is like a group of really bad people, of bandits and whatnot, that they kind of run into at the same time. You also, of course, have... Each
they
of the
might
vehicles
have been
in the
1,007
race.
At first, and then they had mentioned that they were 1,003 because the other four were gone. Yeah. So you might be right on that.
Because there were only technically about three of them at the very end, so that makes sense. So yeah, that's kind of the deal. Just meeting each one of the racers, each of the racers kind of being their own very unique characters and their own reasoning. One being Jing, she's a mechanic that really wants to prove that she can race too, but of course being in the industry that she is, it's kind of very male dominant. She wants to kind of prove that she can be a racer too. There's the one from the BMW group wants to prove their vehicle being the best, and many other ones, of course, wanting the money or whatnot. So yeah, what'd you think of the race across America? Definitely not the Hanna-Barbera cartoonish racing shenanigans I was expecting.
This show spent more time doing everything but racing.
Yeah.
It's I don't want to hate this show because I do like a lot of the characters, and I think that that's probably where the show shines the most. The unfortunate part is that it got kind of stuck in. I don't want to say the story because the story was fine. The characters were good, but I guess it was really the story that was most of my problem. Is it just it wasn't a strong enough of a nobody had a strong enough motivation. Nobody was really. It seemed almost contrived the amount of effort everybody was putting into doing it until they got to the latter parts where they did actually have kind of a villain that kind of shook out of the mix, and then they started kind of competing against that antagonist. But unfortunately, it just never really felt like it pulled together. It just was all these characters that were interesting in their own right, but nobody got really delved into. It just was kind of, they were there. Jing probably had the strongest character moment out of the entire show.
And she was very early on.
And she was really early in the show. And
she kind of gets resolved very quickly.
So it's kind of frustrating. I don't want to just bash on this because it is, like I said, it does have some solid characters. It's just none of them were really explored. And it just felt like almost painful. It really does. I wanted much, much more out of this.
Yeah, I think the early on segments of it, I really wasn't sure what I was getting into. I did want to give it a shot, definitely, because it was a PA Works original. And I mean, they've had a couple of missteps here recently with their originals, but I mean, their early originals with PA Works have been absolutely fantastic. And I think that was because of the pedigree of writers they had. I mean, you had Mario Kata with Hanasaki Roha, so they've had some really good writers in with them in order to make originals, but I think their latest entries of originals have not been that stellar. I was kind of looking forward to this one just because it did look extremely different. It was a very Western cross-country race kind of thing going on, and the cast was very unique in style with each one of them. But I think the struggle that really does come in with this show is I think it just has too many characters, and rightfully so, because it is a race, and I wouldn't want, you know, to have a bunch of faceless racers all competing against the main character. But at the same time, that does cause a difficulty that it's trying too hard to kind of try to give each one of them some kind of character development. But in the end, they never really do. Like I said, besides Jing, she got like pretty much an entire episode devoted to her, whereas a lot of the other characters may had like a good, you know, 5-10 minute segment to really get into their character. And even the villain himself in the very end, I kind of asked Tris if I missed something because it just sounded like the main villain just wanted everything to burn, which is perfectly fine, but that doesn't really give me much of a climax. Just, okay, just you got to stop that, dude. Okay, we got to stop that, dude. All right, let's go. Yay. go protagonists, I guess. I don't know. It's a struggle because it is a very unique looking show. It's a very unique style of show and storytelling that we don't really see often. It's just in the end, it kind of turned into being a very okay show. It's just a very okay show.
A nice little tidbit to throw out there to give them props is it's obvious that they were trying to do the Western, and that is a really cool thing in itself. I mean, it is interesting to see a Japanese perspective of a Western, and by Western I mean a gun-toting cowboy. Wild West, yeah, and so it is interesting to see it from that perspective, and it is
just weird that everybody in America speaks Japanese that day. I was telling Chris it's great because I need to see if they're getting the second half of it put on Netflix before next Saturdays before we can do the next reviews, but The Great Pretender did it really great because with The Great Pretender, they had it start in Japan. Everybody, of course, speaks Spanish, or Spanish, speaks Japanese. But at some point, they hop on a flight and go back to America, and they're in the car and they're talking to each other. And one guy's very broken English, and the other one's pretty good English. He actually was a very good speaking English, even though you knew that he was Japanese was his first. And at some point, the guy gets angry, and then there's a little subtitle down at the bottom said, from this point on, everything is going to be in Japanese, and they start yelling in Japanese, and I'm like, okay, that was a really good way of putting it. Like, we acknowledge that this is supposed to be in English, but we're tired of dubbing this in English, so, sorry, go ahead.
No, it is fun to see it from their perspective, and there is a lot of interesting tidbits that they pick up that we don't actually naturally pick up because it's native to us. So it's fun to see that from that perspective. So if anything, that might be an interesting thing for some of the more artsy type people that would like to see that kind of a perspective in the mix.
Yeah. One of the other struggling things with the entire show is I think early on, I kind of mentioned to Chris, like everything before the race started and everything after the race ended was great. Like I loved, you know, when Apare went up against Al right off the bat, that was a fun race. And at the very end, Sophia, the entire show was great, but Sophia in that very beginning area with Al was, their chemistry was excellent. I loved when she went to, Apare offered the segue and Al's like, no, it's all right, I'm good. And then she's like, okay, cool, I want it. And he's like, no, I want it now. They were great, and I think that was a great start to the entire show. It was like everything up until the point before that first takeoff that they had was really well put together. Like, Jing was, her story was before then as well. Her story was great. Was really well put together. Did kind of hit on, yes, technically this is a thing at that period of time, and they handled it really well, and her character was really strong, and I loved her character. Don't or know Hototo. Why we didn't.
They didn't do well with Hototo at all.
Yeah, Hototo was just annoying. Which
no, is I don't. I wouldn't say he was annoying. Character. I think that they
well, like every time they really, ran into anybody, it's like, you're the one that killed my family, yeah. aren't you? And it's like, dude, chill. You don't have to try to kill everybody you see just because you hear Gil's name. Obviously, there's a lot of people taking his name. It doesn't mean everybody needs to be killed that you run into. Because eventually you're going to get the wrong person. And Kasami mentions at some point, he's like, you're going to get the wrong person kind of thing. Because he keeps taking out your axe every time you hear his name. Chill. I mean, the Gunfu stuff was cool as well. I mean, it was fun that they actually gave a reason for the Gunfu. Like, usually it's like, okay, you do have a bunch of people with guns. Just them hitting, you know, hiding behind something and shooting over and over again might be a little boring. So they do a lot of the Gunfu thing where they're up close, and they're knocking the gun away at the last second as it fires off over and over again and doing flips and stuff. And they kind of mention later on why they technically do that. So I won't spoil that, but it is cool that they actually do give a reason for the Gunfu, and it's not just for Flash, and it is technically flashy and cool, but and those segments are fun. It's just that most of the races were very, I mean, again, there weren't really races. It was just kind of, they may run into an obstacle and they'll handle that obstacle. But most of the cases was in between when they got the checkpoints and everybody's trying to repair their vehicles or whatever in between these checkpoints and then moving on to the next one. It wasn't really the, like I joked about, the Hanna-Barbera people riding down the road and constantly trying to cut each other off and knock each other off the road and deploying crazy wheel spinning blades or anything like that. It's just literally mostly trying to get into characters and their journey across the country, which again didn't really do too well in that particular period of time of the actual show. So, but yeah, like I said, it's an okay show. I am glad that it only went one core. I really was thinking it was going to go two cores because I think the race started at episode 6.
Yeah.
So it was a about the halfway point of the show itself before they even started racing. And I'm like, I wonder if they're going to do two cores with this. But then at some point in the later episodes, suddenly out of nowhere, it's like, no, they're going to finish this. Okay, sure. We'll do that. Not saying if they made it or not, question mark.
We were quite concerned about the length of the show when we noticed very quickly that it was six episodes in and then we started the race.
Well, that was my struggle, was that I was technically enjoying it up to the point where the race started. But I was really curious if it was going to end up going two cores. And I think by the time we started actually getting to the race and getting towards a later part of it, I was like, okay, well, I hope this doesn't actually go two cores, because I don't know that I'd be able to actually sit through it at this point, because the race of itself is not that interesting with the character moments they're presenting during that time. So, but like I mentioned, it's a fun cast. I love their style. I love the style of the setting and all that kind of stuff. It just ended up being a very okay show.
Well, I mean, and you can't really blame us when some of the characters would pop up on the screen and you're like, I really don't want to know your backstory. And I mean, we got kind of a clip of that particular set of characters and their backstory, and it was like, is this all? Okay, fine, we can deal with that, but don't give me any more. I don't want to know.
Don't try to make me feel sorry for you. So that's Potoranma. That's the sad thing, is I really don't want PA Works to, like, this is a very unique style, and I love they went something very unique. I just want PA Works keep trying. keep shooting for those originals, because I know that eventually you're going to not make that next knockout that I'm always looking for. So if you're listening, PA Works, please continue. Just get good writers. They need to really look into their writers and get some solid people in there. So again, that's a Potoranma. Check that out if you're looking for a Japanese take on a Hanna-Barbera race across the country western show. Decadence is our next one. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Nut. The source is an original, and the genres are action, adventure, and sci-fi. And this one had director Yuzuru Tachikawa working on it, who did Death Billiard, Death Parade, Mob Psycho 100 Season 2, and assistant work for Terran Resonance. The writer was Hiroshi Seko, who wrote Attack on Titan, Lost Girls, and the script and series composition for Vinland Saga, Attack on Titan, Seraph of the End, and Cabinary of the Iron Fortress. So, Yeah, this one. This takes place on Earth. Mankind's kind of been pretty wiped out at this point. All of mankind's residents are currently living on a mobile fortress called Decadence, and they are hiding away from the, gosh, I forgot the name of the monsters. The Goddos?
God dolls.
These weird alien-looking creatures that all attack humans, and so they all live on this Decadence, this big mobile fortress, and every now and then their best fighters go out and kill these things and come back, and then the other class of people that live on this Decadence are pretty much doing engineering work, working on Decadence, you know, fixing weapons and working on keeping the actual facility working while the others go out and fight. And we follow the main character being Natsumi. She currently is trying to become one of these fighters that go out and fight
Tinker.
The Goddos, but she's not being accepted for it, so she's really determined to, but she ends up being assigned to working on the side of the Decadence with a guy named Kaburagi, which you kind of quickly find out he technically used to be a fighter, but no longer is. We don't really know why in the earlier segments of it. But yeah, she's not wanting to give up on it, so she's kind of trying to see if she can get him to train her and become a fighter to go out there and fight him, because her father at some point died to these things, and she wants to go out and make the world peaceful and get rid of all the nasty alien things in the world. And then at some point, was it episode 2? Or was it episode 3? It was episode 2 or 3. We finally get the reveal that, or we immediately get the reveal that...
2.
Most of the fighters that go out to fight, not all of them, which we kind of had to confirm it at some point, most of the fighters that go out and fight are actually avatars of some weird alien creature thingy-majiggies that are up in a spaceship somewhere, and they do this for sport. And so the big twist and everything really early on, it's not a huge spoiler, really early on is that this is all kind of a game for them, and the humans live inside Decadence and keep it well-kept and are trying to survive, living day by day in fear, but, you know, the aliens are having fun uploading into avatars, going down to Earth and fighting the evil aliens for sport. So they make little events and everything. And, yeah, it's kind of revealing the secret behind everything. And, mostly I would say, and you might agree or disagree. I think, Kaburagi's technically the main character of the show, and it doesn't really seem like that early on, but he really does technically take over the show. And it's really his story about meeting Natsumi and meeting this quote unquote Kaburagi. I don't know. Kaburagi meeting this actual human and realizing, you know, the kind of the screwed upness of this world. So
I wouldn't disagree with you on that one. I think that it does provide him the motivation to do what he needs to do. This show is so weird because their big reveal. Yeah, the biggest beef that I have is they absolutely fumbled their reveal. It did. It felt so out of place. I think that we even mentioned it in our first impressions on this show. And that's why we've kept joking about whether or not this was kind of going to be our new
Cross Ange,
because the way it came out with its big reveal, it was so out of left field, and it was like, why did you do it this way? It wasn't anything that they even hinted at. It just was kind of blah. Okay, whoa, this is what are we doing here? And it did take us kind of a while to. I mean, we did some to a point. We caught on to what was going on, but it wasn't. It didn't really completely confirm itself until nearly, what, 4 episodes in, when we finally were like, okay, yes, this is what's happening. This is how it works. And maybe they were trying to piecemeal it so that you felt like you needed to find out more, but none of it was interesting enough to make it something that you desire to want to know about. And then even when they finally finished everything out, there was nothing else. It's like they were advertising Christmas, you know, day one, day two. Oh, here's your presents. And then you're all the way at day 24 and you have no more presents left. And it's like, okay, yeah, I got to play with the presents for a little while, but there's no new surprise. So what's the point? So I am very, very frustrated with the show. I like it for its concept. It was an interesting concept. I did find some interesting characters. Kaburagi was an excellent character. A couple of the other ones, I did really like Natsume. But for the most part, the storyline really, really was weak. It had an interesting concept, really big surprise in the second episode, and then nothing left. So that's where I pretty much stand.
Yeah, I think from a viewpoint, if it didn't really provide me anything, I would agree with that. But I don't think it necessarily didn't provide me anything beyond that point, because that's a really good way of putting it. It's technically, it is a show that has a big plot twist, but the plot twist is right off the bat. And then the rest of the show, I think, is really characters developing based on the knowledge of that plot twist. And I really did feel kind of cheated with that big reveal. It really did feel like I had a huge informational dump that said, hey, this is actually the world, and here's... And they kind of put on the face that, you know, nothing really matters in the end. And that really does kind of make you feel like, well, what's the point in even continue watching? It doesn't really feel like there is a purpose to most of this stuff. And I think they managed to actually produce that purpose. And that was really with Kaburagi and his experience with Natsumi and how he kind of changed his viewpoint of the world and possibly, you know, shaking his fist at the rules that are kind of put in this world. And I think that was really the driving force for the show for a good portion of it. My frustration is that I could never really truly... It was really hard for me to really care about a lot of the characters in this show because of the art style choice. I do appreciate when they try to make a different, quote-unquote, species or different beings that are in this story, in this world, look very, very unique. But because I talked about it in the first impressions, it almost was like, here's this digital world. I specifically said digital world because I thought it was a digital world. And I didn't really realize until later that, no, this is not a digital world. These are actually their physical selves. And it made sense if they were in digital world. And these were all, it was all kind of like some weird, I don't know, expelled from paradise kind of thing where there's just, you know, these digital beings that are uploaded in a server somewhere. And every now and then they can be downloaded into I'm saying downloaded as in like physical from up there, down here, which technically would be uploaded to an avatar to go out and fight. But it was really kind of them getting in almost like a Nerve Gear VR system and then getting injected into an avatar down on the Earth's surface and then going out and fighting. That art style difference, even though, like I said, I appreciate the idea of trying to make them unique and very, quote-unquote, very alien, it was very jarring to actually care about the characters because they felt like I was watching a cartoon, very Saturday morning cartoonish characters over here, and then I would jump back to the more realistic-looking characters with Natsumi and Kaburagi and the rest of the people, well, technically Kaburagi, not one of them, but his actual avatar, and everybody trying to survive on the Decadence. And they felt so disconnected because of that art style change. And then when you really start getting them kind of meshing in with each other and actually being next to each other, it's like this is, it really looks off-putting and it doesn't really fit the story. So that's really my struggle. And I think a lot of people might not care about that artistic choice with the other side of this whole field. But for me, it messed it up. But I think that was the only thing that was really kind of bothering me throughout the entire show. I actually really did like the character developments that happened with everybody. I think, like I said, even though they presented the entire plot twist early on, the story itself was the characters and how they decided to react to, you know, basically the entire beginning segments kind of reveals to you that these two sides don't really necessarily know of each other. The humans just think they are with a bunch of humans that are going out and fighting. and the other side just knows them as these things that are down there and is kind of almost a video game to them. So having one person from each side really kind of come to grips with that was the cooler part of the whole story. And I did like that. I think in the end it did really work for me. So yeah, I think it was a good show. Really good show. I just I had my issues with the art style choices and I guess the big information dump early on, but I think in the end it turned out to be a solid show. And I think it was of originals, it's been a really fantastic original that we don't really see often. Very unique story. Just has some stumbling points here and there, so. And it was okay with the animation. Nut's not known for doing very good with animation. Well, they're really good with flying attackers, so there you go. Going from Tawny the Evil to this one, so they really do like flying stuff. So, there you go. Maybe their next one's going to be another flying attack action show. I don't know.
We need some pipes.
Pipus?
Yeah.
Some pipus. More pipus. Justice for Pipu. Yeah. Again, not a fan of the art style choices, but a good show overall. This Decadence. Check that out if you are looking for something up that alley. The God of High School. This one was streaming on Crunchyroll for 13 episodes. They already have a second season announced for it, being done by Studio MAPPA. The source is a web manga, or manhwa. The genres are action, sci-fi, adventure, comedy, supernatural, martial arts, fantasy, the kitchen sink. The director was Sung-Hoo Park, who did Junie Tyson and Garo Vanishing Line, and this was a Crunchyroll original. You can tell by the fact that every single kind of advertising backboard in the entire show and the ring of the fighting had Crunchyroll written all over it, thus proving that Crunchyroll supports children being put in fighting rings and beating each other to death. So, good on you, Crunchyroll, for sponsoring child abuse. I don't know about the show. I really don't. There's kids in high school and they're fighting. So there you go. There's these weird Persona-esque JoJo reference stuff in there with the things coming out people's back and fighting each other.
How do you know it's a JoJo reference? Somebody say that.
I'm assuming eventually, because I think I've heard people say that Persona is a JoJo reference to... It was a JoJo reference, so maybe if I say it's Persona-esque, they'll say, no, it's actually JoJo. Everything goes to JoJo, obviously. But yeah, the Persona things coming out people's backs and fighting. So the main concept is you follow Ralph the Bat Jin. It also kind of jumps quickly to Han and Mira. There's three characters, main characters, basically. And they are all pretty much in the early segment going to the same location. They're going to this... this tournament called God of High School, where they bring in high schoolers to ring to fight and become the best. And when they go to the nationals, whatever, eventually the winner will get their wish granted, whatever wish they want. And that made sense. I was following it. I'm good with this. And then at some point, we kind of get a little bit into Mira's character. She's kind of trying to master this sword that her father had. Jin wants to find his grandpa who disappeared at some point and left him behind. And Han, later on, we kind of find out he's trying to win to help his friend. And then, like I said, they start even introducing these kind of weird beings that are somehow related to gods or something like that. And this random cult that's trying to find this key. And then everything starts blowing up, Buddha statues flying down, people getting eaten by gigantic morphing people, and jaws sharks coming out of the ground, and it kind of just came to a conclusion.
Training lost montage, I guess. Andy, lost Andy back in level at episode 7.
I think the moment that we had the Matrix fight is about the time that started losing me. They had like a crazy Matrix scene where like they had tons of duplicates of one guy jumping on somebody and then twisting around camera and exploding them all out. I'm like, yeah, they're cool. That's kind of Matrix-ish. Probably a JoJo reference also. I think Matrix was a JoJo reference as well. So I don't know. What's your thoughts on The God of High School?
Why do I got to go first? This show, truth be told, I really did want to like this. first episode or two, I was totally into it. I love how much this show just, it absolutely built momentum. The fights were absolutely enthralling. I loved it. And then when we did our first impressions, I said there was one, I may have just mentioned it to Andrew.
We just came off the mirror episode on that just before the first impressions.
And I may have mentioned that there's one thing that I'm concerned about. And if it happens, if they go in that direction, it's probably going to lose me very fast. And guess what? They did it. And they did it in so much factor that, like Andrew had said, it just became an obnoxious. Like Andrew had mentioned, Buddha statues flying out of the sky. We've got swords and hands flying okay. everywhere. And it's like, okay.
I had flashbacks of the K series. Gohan's K with like the whole sword coming out of the sky thing. You're like, oh, somebody's fighting. That was always a sign that, you know, the strongest of the clans was fighting, was the key would show up or whatever.
And I don't fault them for wanting to go in that direction. I really don't. Because it gives them something outside of just the fights to do. And it is frustrating because what I originally loved about it, I was okay with the kind of in the background, these persona-ish things, if you want to call them that, with them being in the background as some kind of a threat, maybe a little bit of battling from them, but like I said, what I was afraid of happening was those things becoming the focus of the battles instead of the actual fights, which the fights were really fantastic. You could see the choreography. I mean, these people knew martial arts and how martial arts is done. A lot of the fights had an impact when they were doing them. A lot of it was phenomenal to see all that stuff. But like I said, having the kind of persona-ish things battling, it is kind of been done a few times, but the what I loved about it was not where it ended up. And that's what's frustrating. The characters themselves, I really did adore a lot of the main characters when they brought in the kind of the mirror image characters. It was really, I really liked them. Some of the background characters were interesting. I would love to see a little bit more of them, but all in all, I ended up checking out fairly quickly on a lot of the big battle stuff. It was like you've lost everything. Yes, there was kind of an idea that was going on, but I really didn't care because you're just making up big old monsters and having the big old monsters fight each other. Okay, I don't care anymore. I really don't.
I'm more a fan of the idea of them having like a fusing happening, but I never really cared much for this big monstrosity fighting for them or whatever and taking over the battle. But I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, early on, it was really great. I love the choreography. The fight scenes were really great. How they kind of, you know, had the impact of attacks. And it was a very fluid in motion. It's obvious, you know, when MAPPA wants to really get motion going, MAPPA just pulls it off. They're very good at action scenes. And they've always have been, besides their dabble here and there in CGI. When they actually do actual fluid animation, it looks fantastic, and they pull that kind of stuff off really well. It's in every single one of their action shows that they pull this kind of stuff off. And that was present here as well. I like the style of the characters and the setting, and everything was great. And, yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. The moment that it really kind of starts bringing... I mean, I kind of agree with you as well. I mean, having this stuff in the background was okay because they had some really cool fight scenes. I remember the apartment scene, that fight scene was fantastic. I thought they, again, not really trying to make the more supernatural abilities they have become kind of this other object that fights, but actually having them duking it out and things exploding, all that stuff was really fun. It's just when it starts getting more grand scale and again, not really knowing what the hell's even going on, I just at the same time kind of checked out. It really quickly became a show that was, I just watched it for the action scenes, and the rest of it was kind of like, I don't really know what's happening, but sure, whatever you guys are angry at each other about, get it figured out, because I want to see that fight over there that was happening, because that was fun. And then you go over here, and these guys are arguing about a key, and I'm like, I don't really know what you guys are talking about. Can I look at the fight over there again? I really don't care what these guys are talking about anymore, because I don't even know what's going on anymore. I like I said, the cult thing or something like that.
Well, especially since they sold one of the characters that was supposed to be the good guy. They kind of made him seem like, not that he was a bad guy, but at least chaotic and kind of more in the neutral good section. It was weird to see him technically being the good guy, and it was like, I don't know anybody's motivations, so...
Yeah, and that's the struggle, because, I mean, there's two issues that the show really has at its core. And it is technically the main reason why I checked out. There's two issues, and one being that it really quickly turned into... It's impossible to really get an idea of who is going to win. It just, at some point, it just turns into... Yeah, technically with every fighting, it's going with every storytelling, with the fighting, it's going to involve the writers deciding who's going to win on each end. But it feels like I don't really know who's going to be the winner, it obviously doesn't have any kind of indication of who should be more powerful than the other, because at any point somebody's going to whip out a gigantic crazy shark out of his back and not kill anybody, but, you know, chomp them in half, but not kill anybody, because nobody dies here. So you don't really... there's no impression of who should be stronger than the other person, so it really makes the fights really seem like I don't really care who wins in the end. It's going to be whatever is decided to be the big super reveal thing in this particular fight. And the other issue really being in not having real motivation, or not really having any care for anybody's story, because we don't really get much perspective of who is who and why we should be caring about one person winning over the other person. I mean, like I said, we kind of mentioned technically Mira, Han, and Jin get their motivations kind of spelled out really early, but the rest of them kind of had like very brief introductions, and I don't really know who they are in the end. And so I'm like, okay, I guess that one lost. I hope his mom's okay now. Or that one lost. Crap. They promised each other, I think, when they were kids that they were going to win and did something. I don't know. The motivations for anybody outside the main three is just kind of, I don't know. And I just get back to the fighting, because the fighting looks really cool. So,
and that's the frustrating thing. And to what Andrew was saying is, it is kind of frustrating to not know the consequence of these fights. That's hard to...
Like
to,
at some point, this guy's like... He just
you got
this is kind of semi spoiler, but at some point things start going really crazy, and somebody just yells out, announces to everybody, the god of high school is over. And I'm like, dude, that's the last thing I care about right now. I don't know why we think that's what anybody cares about right now. Like, we are apocalypse levels right now, and you're concerned about reporting to the public that the god of high school is over? We were done with God of High School, I think, way back in episode 3. Who cares? I thought it was just a joke. Oh, this is serious. You really do want to take this seriously. Like, it was funny.
And when I say the consequences are kind of, you know, just you don't know what the consequences are, is going into what Andrew was saying. I mean, literally, you have people who are quote unquote dying, not dying, and then the people who are not dying are randomly dying. And it's like, and then you got god level things just randomly popping out of everything and just beating up on, I don't know, whatever, the world, I guess? We're beating up on the world.
The world, Chris.
The knife came down and there's stabbed another JoJo the world. Reference, the I world, don't though. Know.
There's another JoJo reference, the world, though.
It became absurd, and then somebody ate something and then became overly powered, and it was like, well, what's the point? I mean, you don't even want to be consistent about the rules, so... Why should we care about anything?
And I think the sad thing about the whole situation is, And I haven't really looked back into it after the, beyond the point of Mira's episode. Is I do know that when Mira's episode happened and how extremely rushed it felt was, according to a few people that I ran into their comments about it, was an issue with how they adapted it. And the original wasn't that rushed. So I do kind of wonder if a lot of this issue is with how maybe possibly rushed the story was in animation, or maybe the pacing was just completely off because they paced it wrong. But I am curious about how much this is an issue in the manga, or maybe it would be more interesting, entertaining and more interesting or more well told the manga. Maybe just the adaptation kind of flubbed it up with the pacing. I'm not really sure one way or the other, but it's fun fighting scenes. That's about all I'm going to really give the show for now. And I probably will check out the second season because they did kind of reveal a couple things at the very end that I might be interested to kind of go back onto, but it will be probably one that early on with the first few episodes going to be its trial period before I would decide to kind of continue on with it, because I do love MAPPA. I love their animation. I love their style. But anything out of the side of the fights was just a real hard struggle to kind of care about. So, yep. That's The God of High School. Check that out if you're looking for a fun action fighting show. Definitely get that there in spades. The Misfit of Demon King Academy, or Mao Gakuen no Fute Kigosha Shijo Saikyo no Mao no Shisho Tensen Shite Shishon Tachi no Gakko E? Or the English translation of that full title is The Misfit of Demon King Academy, History's Strongest Demon King Reincarnates and Goes to the Kozu School with His Descendants. This one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio Silverlink, sources of manga, or not a manga, a light novel. The genres are action, demons, magic, fantasy, and school. And this one, the director was Shin Onuma, who did Unhappy Baka to Test, F, Tell Memories and Melodies, Death March, Fate Collide Movie, Kokoro Connect, and Watamote. So yeah. This one follows the Demon King Arnos. And Anos, at some point, the hero of the humans came down to fight him in his lair. And Anos said, "Hey, look, dude, both sides here, I'm sure you guys agree with me. You know, this fight needs to stop. It's going to keep going on. One side's going to kill the other. And it's going to just breed revenge over and over again." So he's like, pretty much tells him, "Look, I'm going to sacrifice myself to create a division between the two sides, bring peace upon the world, and then we can all kind of go our merry ways into the future." And, you know, the hero doesn't really believe him at the first, but ends up kind of going along with it, stabs him, sacrifices himself, and this big wall divided the humans and the demons. And then Arnos basically goes and kind of puts himself into, like, a slumber to be reincarnated. Way, what was it, a thousand years later? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Way later in life. He is reborn into this particular time frame, what the story kind of starts at, to two very loving parents. when they're trying to name him, he kind of tells them what they're going to name him because he could talk as a baby. And I think it only took him, like, what was
one
it?
1 month.
One month.
I kid you not. 6 months.
I forgot. Yeah. In about a month, he basically grew up so quickly. He was already a teenager and wants to go to school already. And joins the Demon King Academy, where he meets Misha and Sasha. Kind of creates a little harem. Is massively overpowered because he used to be the Demon King and he's still overpowered. And now the times are kind of more peaceful. Of course, things have kind of been without war for a long time. And things have kind of changed, though. Now, that's kind of the twist. It seems like the history of the demon realm has kind of changed. There's this new demon king that actually supposedly solved everything back in the day, and he's trying to figure out who kind of altered the memories of people after he had sacrificed himself and saved everybody. So, yeah, all while going to school and showing how insanely overpowered he is and how not overpowered anybody else is. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Misfit of Demon King Academy?
This was actually kind of my my surprise candy for the season. I really, really had a lot of fun watching the show from the get-go. It was absolutely absurd, some of the stuff they did. And I really fell in love with a lot of these characters through the show. I really did enjoy myself watching this show. It just was so much fun, so much goofiness. And like Andrew said, the harem aspects was just kind of goofy and fun. And I really did enjoy the characters. I had a lot of fun watching this show. Hit and miss on the kind of the animation and stuff like that, but I was able to get past most of it. I really did enjoy myself.
Did you enjoy it, though?
I enjoyed it. I loved it a lot. Did you get the impression that I like the show?
I think you said enjoy about 15 times, so I just want to make sure. No, this is kind of one of those ones that's very on the borderline of shows that have overpowered main characters. Because there's a lot of shows that have the, you know, I would put more in the, for me personally, than the area of overpowered that didn't work. Is shows like Smartphone, In Another World with My Smartphone. Was the one with the Merlin son. What's that one called? Wise Man's Grandchild.
Yeah.
And that one didn't work at all. And there's other shows that have like the overpowered character, and it works really well with things like Overlord and stuff. So it is really kind of it's a balancing act that these creators kind of have to do with these types of shows with very overpowered main characters, because it can really quickly become kind of repetitive and boring. Like every time they come into a situation, you know they're going to win. The overpowered character is always going to win. You just got to figure out how you're going to make that fun. How can you have him be overpowered and it not be kind of like, yeah, I know that was coming. Move on. And I think this one did really well with it. But every now and then it kind of didn't. I would probably say most of the time it did really work, and I kind of smiled at him. And it's mainly because, you know, with this particular show, a lot of his overpoweredness is kind of at the detriment to somebody that you want to lose really badly. And I think that was really, really where it really worked. And I think that was kind of the same situation with things like, you know, Overlord, except for here recently, the very latest season, where it kind of starts feeling dirty. It really works with this one, because you do see how, you know, nasty these people are that he's winning against. And in most cases, they are demon people. So the problem is that every now and then it didn't work, and it kind of felt pretty boring. So this show, for the most part, did actually pull that off and worked really well. And I do definitely agree. I think I did enjoy a lot of the characters. Misha was great. Really love Sasha. I kind of wish they had more into Sasha and Misha. They technically did get into the crux of their story and really got into why they are the way they are and kind of resolved their issue. But I kind of felt like they could have gotten more into their actual family, which kind of was in the background. Did like Rei and Misa was great. Loved the parents. They were absolutely fantastic every time he went home with somebody, and how kind of open arms they were with everybody coming in and very accepting of their situation.
Just another member of your harem, honey. Come on in.
Yeah. Yeah. I have, what was it, 100 children?
10,000.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Tell me about them, kind of thing. You were busy, boy. Yeah. Very accepting family. It is one of those shows where it does overpowered very well. Every now and then it kind of, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, let's move on, kind of thing. But for the most part, it worked. And I think that has to do very much with Arnos. I think he was his Seiyu pulled off his character very well. I think I've heard him in several locations before, but this one, his Seiyu embodied his character. His voice matched with him very well. He had a very cocky voice to him. Very, not so much cocky, I wouldn't say that. It's more just confidence. He has a confidence.
He does. He has a confidence. He's a cool guy that is just, like Andrew said, confidence. So he does kind of come off as cocky every once in a while, but at the same time, it's like, nah, you're just that cool.
Yeah. And so I think he makes the character, and he does make it very much so entertaining. And that is kind of technically what kind of carried the show all the way through. The overall plot lines, I'm very mixed on. I mean, I do think it came together in the end. Technically, worked out well. It was a very well self-contained story too. I think the gist of the beginning was kind of technically resolved in the end. I am kind of curious what else they do have in the storylines going forward, just because, like I said, it technically does reveal the secret of why things are the way they are when he first is reincarnated, and thus anything beyond this point is going to technically be something new. So hats off to them technically for having a self-contained story in an adaptation. I don't remember there being any teases at the very end, which is very much a unique thing for light novel adaptations. So, I am curious, technically where the story would go from this point, because like I said, it technically does wrap things up. So that's a huge plus as well, is not having that feeling of kind of being left on the hook and wondering what the hell happens next. So yeah, with that said, I think as I talk more about it, I talk it up more and more, even though I think I technically sounded pretty negative at the beginning, just because the overpoweredness didn't work every time. But yeah, solid cast, solid characters. It is a overpowered main character type story, so if you don't like those, you may want to give it a chance, because I think this is one of the better ones of that. I don't think it technically felt very haremish. I think technically in the early segments, it technically, by our definition, isn't a harem. It's more of a love triangle, if anything, because it only has technically two love interests for the most part. But it does technically joke at it several times. I mean, it is kind of like in this demon world, this concept really isn't really a thing. It's like, yeah, if you wanted these two girls, I don't think there would be a problem. He is the demon king. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. The comedy is pretty spot on. Pretty good, pretty solid little take on the overpowered character, and I think it worked well. So, yeah, it probably is one of the ones that of all the announcements of continuing seasons, this is probably the one I would want more. But like I said, it doesn't technically have a cliffhanger to it. It does resolve everything in the end. So, good on them. Anything else?
There's five. Five love interests. It's just that.
Oh yeah, there is the chorus. There is the chorus. No,
you have that too, but they don't count.
But I do agree. He's a cool guy, and I think that's another thing that helped. Like I said, he does have that confidence because he is the previous demon lord. So he is massively overpowered. It is a time of peace, so everybody is kind of waning in their abilities. Nobody really is kind of challenged by war. So he is kind of from a war period thrown into more of a peaceful period, and so his combat prowess is insanely higher than anybody else. So he has that confidence to him, but he's also, yeah, like you mentioned, a really good guy. And like, you'd have these moments where like he could easily kind of boast in front of everybody, but he's like, you know, I won because this sword my dad make, and the dad's over there kind of crying like, that's my boy kind of moments. It's like, I really love those mom protecting the sword and all the quote unquote, yeah, his little groupie of girls,
fan club.
Yeah, his little fan club from the school, which they're all a bunch of dorks and I love them to death, are all protecting the mom and the sword because it's his sword that he needs for the battle, and he'll be disqualified, and him kind of showing up and just kind of wrecking things is always fun. Like I said, it does the power overpoweredness well, because you kind of technically want these people to get their one up, and when he does show up, so yeah, him solving like spell triangle hexagonal things that everybody's all like, what the hell is this thing? And or them trying to fool everybody else because something's really overcomplicated and they can't see the issues in it. And he kind of going, no, you technically foiled that. It's supposed to be right here. And you kind of mess with the crazy spell incantation and fix it. Yeah. Good stuff, though. Misfit of Demon King Academy. Yeah, I would definitely agree. It's definitely probably the bigger surprise of the season. So I would say, would that be the gem of the season? Are we ready to admit that? No. There's another one next episode that I'm going to wait on saying if it would be mine, because I do want to debate it. There's something else that could be my surprise of the season the next episode that we're going to do reviews on. So I'll wait. Can you claim it now, or is there something else you'd want to debate it?
There is one that
you're probably in the same shoes I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only one that I would go, maybe, possibly.
Yeah,
Because I did enjoy myself watching that one, too. I really enjoyed that one.
Did you enjoy it, though? That's your
can
word.
Can I do 13 enjoys? I don't know. Maybe 14 enjoys.
I caught myself earlier because I kept doing the air quotes things, quote unquote, quote unquote, quote unquote. Now you're doing enjoy, 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 enjoy. So we have our words for the episode.
I enjoy some quotes. That's the name of your episode.
I will say now, I think that Misfit of Demon King Academy, I think, is my second. There is one that I think would be the gem of the season, and that's not this one, so. Yeah. This one is Peter Grill. Obviously, the gem of the season is Peter Grill and the Philosopher's Time. Oh my gosh, why did I think of that one? This one is Peter Grill to Kinja no Jikan. This one was streaming on Crunchyroll and High Dive, ran for 12 episodes. They were short episodes. They were in for 12 episodes each, so they were half time frame ones. Done by Studio Wolfsbane. The sources of manga. The genres are harem, comedy, ecchi, fantasy. This one was directed by Tatsumi, who's basically just done a bunch of hentai, which is, I think, the same case with Wolfsbane. So they're just kind of toning things down so they can get on television, I'm guessing. this follows Peter Grill, as the title would suggest. And Peter Grill has just won, like, the biggest tournament possible in the kingdoms. He is deemed pretty much the greatest warrior of the current time. And with that comes a great, very big responsibility in that pretty much every female in the entire radius of knowledge of his winning wants a seed so they can bear strong children. So, yeah, the likes of the ogres, the onis, the elves, everybody except for his fiance, who thinks that babies come from storks. So, even though he's betrothed, and he has a lovely bride, who is the daughter of the guild leader of the entire kingdom, the one that he wants to bag does no clue about it, and all the other girls know exactly what they need to get, and they want to get it from him, so...
And they're going to get it.
Yeah, several
Make
times.
Make no doubt about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, your thoughts on Peter Grill.
This show is absolute goofy fun. I can't say that I hold it up very highly. I actually walked away kind of disappointed, all said and done. Mostly because while it was fun, I did get frustrated in the fact that Peter Grill is just flat out annoying.
He's got the same say you as that annoying guy from Demon Slayer, so obviously he gets annoying.
I
Lightning Flash Boy and is screaming.
His character came off as just flat out whiny and annoying, and it's like you've got
he's
the
like
world
the,
handed to you on a silver platter, and you're whining about it.
He's
and
the
it's
ultimate
like,
poor you.
Yeah, it's the ultimate poor you. I've made the joke so many times, and it's like, this is the ultimate. And it's like, oh, poor you. Just shut up and die or something. You're just annoying. But yeah, other than that, if you can get past Peter Grill, it's actually really goofy fun. I did enjoy, especially when we got Antonio out there and kind of the situation going on with him. The girls themselves were absolutely hilarious. Luvilia, her entire joke is just too funny.
We're in a hot spring that gives good fertility. You should come over this side. And then we could pray together for the stork to come.
it's a mess. But yeah, it was a goofy fun time. So yeah,
I'm pretty much in the same boat. I didn't find Peter to be too obnoxious. I mean, he didn't get to the levels of, like I said, was it Tanjiro? No, it wasn't Tanjiro. Tanjiro was the main character. Lightning Boy from Demon King, or not King, Demon Slayer. I think for me, it more kind of came down to the fatigue of the joke halfway through. I did get a kick out of it early on, just the whole aspect of, like, yeah, women sneaking in there and him kind of being kind of forced to have to do, even though he's supposed to be the greatest, strongest warrior of all time and can basically bat any gigantic ogreish beast out of his way with a swing of his hand. Obviously, he can't keep women from getting on him, even though he's literally like, no, I don't want to do this. No, please stop. And then afterwards, like, this is terrible. Like, he doesn't want it. But yeah, he still does it every time. And it's like, okay, dude, really? If that's really your choice, then go bag Lavilia. I mean, just go get her. Show her how it's done. show her where the start goes. I don't know. It's kind of a situation where after, yeah, like I said, you get kind of the introduction of each of the girls. At some point, it kind of just becomes like just turn into a harem or a hentai at this point and move on. The joke kind of got to the point where it was just not really hitting anymore because they did all the jokes. There was a few kind of points in which it did kind of catch me off guard and do again something that was really funny. I got a huge kick out of the dinner that he was having with Lavilia, and then the father came in and somebody was under the table and how he's kind of avoiding these situations, the date with Lavilia, and then each of these girls showing up and him having to go into the go off to the side and handle things. But for the most part, it kind of, after some point, like I said, about halfway through, it just kind of, yeah, okay, this is the show. But it was a short, so it didn't really technically overstay its welcome in the end. So yeah, if you're looking for a goofy little sex comedy kind of thing, it definitely kind of fits the bill. So, and Mimi's Best Girl.
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah. Which one's yours?
I think we're picking on Piglet. I hate to admit it, but I love Piglet. She was just adorable.
Yeah. She technically was the one that was like, I'm fine with being the mistress. So technically, if you go Piglet, you get another one. So I guess that works. Go, Mimi Piglet, I guess. Yeah.
But I did get a kick out of Vegan. Vegan was funny.
I was going to say, I was very disappointed by Vegan.
I thought she was hilarious.
She didn't really work all that well. I mean, she was great. Her introduction was great, but yeah, they didn't really do much with her after that.
Well, that I think is more Peter Grill. Peter Grill has destroyed that show.
Yeah.
He was funny at first, but like Andrew was mentioning, the joke got old. It really did.
His wingman was the best man. They just showed him like, oh, for literally Tim Robinson was the oh poor you guy. Like, yeah, oh sure, okay, dude, yeah, boohoo. My team romantic comedy snafu climax for next one on Yahari Ore no Shishon Love Comedy wa Machigateru Kon. This one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes. The studio is Feel. The source is light novel, and the genres are slice of life, comedy, drama, romance, and school. Yes, it's the third and final season of My Team Romantic Comedy snafu climax. I was telling Chris I wasn't sure how I wanted to do this because technically, if I say I love this season or if I was disappointed this season, I think it would pretty much reveal the crux of what everybody's going into season four is basically the choice that is seemingly going to have to be done with this season. Not to say that the choice was happened or not. See, that's the whole thing, is everything kind of difficult. So I'm going to give a pretty moderate spoiler warning at this point, just because I think anything I say about the show can technically construed those aspects of this final season. I'm going to avoid it for as long as possible, though, because I think quite a bit of the season was build up to that, which is probably one of my biggest frustration with this one. For those who don't know, my love for My Team Romantic Comedy snafu series as a whole has always been in several elements, and I think a lot of it has to do with Hachiman, his relationship with Yui Yukino, and many other characters over a long period of time over these last three seasons. And I've loved every single character interaction for the most part, Hachiman being very kind of cold and very bitter. From the very beginning, he's a very kind of close away person. He thinks youth is terrible and just wants to get away from everything, which is great because at some point the teacher in the season makes a note to that. Something he wrote down a long time ago in the first season that we remember. But yeah, a lot of his kind of very, yeah, like I said, very bitter attitude, very quick, snappy comments, very quick dialogue between characters. Every exchange between him and his sister is absolute gold. And that was what I really enjoyed about it, is those interactions and those character moments between him, and how kind of very self-destructive he is as a character is another big part of it as well. His way of resolving a lot of situations was kind of him making himself out to be the bad guy, even though he wasn't, just to resolve the situation, just so, because he, for the most part, doesn't really want to deal with it. And that destructive behavior and how that affected those around him, people didn't like seeing it. I think at some point, I think it was Yukino, I think, or maybe it was another character, kind of pointed out, hey, you need to stop that. That's you know, that hurts everybody. It doesn't benefit anybody. You might have solved the situation, but you didn't solve, you made another one, basically.
That was Yukino that did that? I thought it was Yui. That was at the end of season two. Because that was when...
The end of season two was the big choice kind of thing, or the wish reveal.
Yeah, because that... well, it was just before that.
Yeah, it was kind of mid... I think it was mid-season. But yeah, I don't remember exactly
who it was. Yeah, that was pretty much when I pretty much checked out, because it was obvious where everything was going.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing with this season, is it's... The writer doesn't really shy away from letting you know what the choice is going to be. And I think that's a frustration that I had. And it was, I think I mentioned in our first impressions, or maybe I mentioned to Chris directly, as I, coming into this last season, well, technically probably early on with the, or late with the first season, you already technically have the poster child. The choice is obvious. It's really kind of the journey. And I don't think I've ever really been surprised by these types of shows where it does have a love triangle happening or a multiple choice heroine character. It always seems pretty obvious who the choice is. The poster child is always pretty obvious. And it sucks for me because I generally don't like the poster child. I obviously usually typically like the other characters that I find to be more attractive or fun or whatever, whereas I don't necessarily always like the obvious choice that is more... I guess broken in some way. But yeah, like I said, I my enjoyment of this series has always been that the element of Hachiman's character, how kind of, you know, self-destructive he is, and the effects of those around him and the interactions he has with other people, and how they kind of figure out how to communicate with him, because his issue is, of course, really early on you find out his issue has always been communication. And that was the issue with Yukino as well. And that was technically why the original club was created, was to kind of solve this issue. And they brought in Yui, and that was the concept that they kind of proposed. And trying to get around those boundaries of communication has always been a central focus of it. And I think more so than ever was probably the biggest focus of this particular season. My issue with this particular season, not so much the choice, or it's not so much the direction it took it, but yeah, I guess it is technically partly the direction that it took it, because I think it kind of strayed away from those founding points that I did enjoy with the first few seasons. Maybe it's more in the fact that the communication is being resolved, and thus it is a build of their character, but they kind of introduced this whole idea that they want to do a prom. They want to do a Western prom in a school in Japan, and it wasn't going so well with the kind of the local community. Yukino's mother kind of gets involved with it because she kind of becomes a spokesperson to come and kind of shut it down. And thus begins this idea that Yukino wants to do it herself. She no longer wants to rely on Hachiman and Yui, anybody else. She's kind of distancing herself, while at the same time Hachiman and Yui kind of do their own thing, where Hachiman decides that rather than get Yukino to accept his help, he is going to force the process through his own way, which is to create a dummy prom that will kind of make everybody decide to take the lesser of two evils, so to speak. And I didn't really like it. I think for the most part of this season, I mean, I loved some individual character moments. I think it was joked about before, but it seems like Studio Feel absolutely loves Yui Yukihama, because they just nail the animation and a lot of the emotional scenes in this particular season. And they really do kind of put a lot of focus into creating a very believable character when the emotions kind of kick up. And that was something that wasn't really present in the first season, which was done by a different studio. Obviously, with the second season, the animation changed quite a bit with the change in studios. And they've done well to kind of capture these characters and their emotional moments all the way into the season. So I do give them credit for really selling the characters. And those individual character moments were great. But for the most part, this season has really been, really early on, they said, yeah, you're waiting for a decision. We're just going to kind of let you know that this is going to be the decision. And then for the rest of the season, you're going, I'm just hoping he changes his mind, because it was pretty obvious they're kind of pointing out a certain direction for it to go. And then when it kind of resolves, it's like, I was mad come episode 11, because I, not so much of the decision, but more so in the, almost a Sakura Sao feeling that I got with it. And for those that don't know, when I say Sakura Sao, there's another show similarly titled Sakura Sao. And in that particular show, they did like a bait and switch where they focus a lot on one character and they really sell that character. And it feels like there is a connection that kind of is created over a long period of time. And there's an absolute absence of another character. And then at some point, they go, oh, yeah, by the way, this was the actual choice. And that's what I mean by a Sakura Sao, where it doesn't really feel like you see any connection happening between two characters. Actually, a void of existence in a actual presence between the two of them in one location. And yet, for some reason, at some point, the choice is made. And that's what I kind of felt with this one. Not so much that I don't like the choice. Not so much that I don't like the heartbreak, because obviously somebody's got to lose, and that's always the heartbreaking thing. I think no matter which direction it goes, one side is going to be a heartbreak. Technically, there's like five choices here. I got the teacher thing at some point, but I never really thought that they would ever actually push on that. They actually technically pushed on it pretty hard with this season. And I did remember seeing a lot of comments of people saying, obviously the choice was the teacher. She was the first to say, I love you. That was fun. Technically six if you add the
boy.
The adorable boy.
I thought about that too.
It's funny because I've seen somebody.
He's always going on about how I should not be feeling these feelings.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that technically there's only one character that really flusters Hachiman. Like, you never see a reaction of physical attraction with anybody but with Saika. Saika's the only one where Hachi will actually turn and blush. None of the other girls ever pulled that off with him. I think technically Iroha did. And I think Iroha was a lot to do with how kind of forward she was. She was always kind of in his face and very flirty. Whereas I think the other girls were kind of always close to him, but not necessarily trying to cross that line. So yeah, it is a batch of really great characters, and obviously there's going to be a heartbreak somewhere. And I think that's a good sign of great writing. I think all these characters have their reasoning for, you know, being in Hachiman's life. And I do appreciate that technically with the last episode, they did kind of try to nudge at you that nobody really is giving up. And I think that's always a good way of bookending these kind of things. It is technically them in high school. Choices they make now obviously can change the next year. They're just at the starting point of their lives. They're going to go off to the universities. And there's plenty more story to tell, which I don't know if the writer decides to make another series. I know this was supposed to conclude the light novel, so unless he does a spinoff, it is technically the entire story.
I did love the nod that you had mentioned to me that they had given. Yeah, that was pretty awesome. I checked out fairly quickly. Andrew,
I didn't know that he didn't like the show, so I'm like, okay, I'll just watch it by myself.
I never liked Hachiman, and I really, really did not want. I was watching it mostly for Yui, and I really didn't want, because I was thinking about going back and catching up, but watching my particular favorite going through nearly the entire season, just being tortured pretty much the whole thing. I just couldn't do it.
I think one positive, another positive for the season is I did like a lot of the, because like I said, I thought the prom stuff was pretty dumb. And it felt like it was spinning its wheel. I guess I really didn't get into that because I got kind of sidetracked. But they introduced the whole proms thing that they were going to work on together. And that was what brought the Sakura South thing up, is, you know, obviously having these characters spend a lot of time with each other and there be some separation. But when it kind of established that, I guess, competition between the three characters early on in the season, from that point until the kind of the later segments when they kind of wrap things up, it felt like it was spinning its wheels. It was just constantly every 2 seconds, it was kind of beating home this idea that they're, Yui wants everybody to be together and be friends. Yukino wants to be separate. Hachiman is kind of Hachiman. He doesn't really communicate what he wants. He doesn't really like the situation, but he doesn't communicate very well. And that really did feel like a good portion of this core. And I got really frustrated by that. It felt like nothing was really moving. It felt like it was kind of spinning its wheels. And that's probably one of the main key reasons. Besides, like I said, all my other complaints, I don't really care what the writer decides to tell these characters and what they're... Because the writer knows the feelings of these characters. The writer knows what the character wants to decide because the writer created this character and he knows what this character is thinking. So obviously the writer is going to tell this character to choose what the character should be choosing. So I don't really care in the end. Yeah, I'm going to be upset. I'm going to cry. I'm going to be heartbroken by, you know, Iroha is going to cry. I'm going to be upset about that. Saika might even show up at some point and cry. I don't know. Psyche might show up. I love Psyche as well. I'm going to be upset by these characters kind of feeling like they got defeated. And it's not a good, healthy thing to judge a show based off of what the writer chooses is the quote-unquote winner. I do appreciate when the writer kind of gives you a... The writer kind of tells you at the very end that, dude, things aren't over. It's not like they choose a winner and then suddenly, boom, the world is done. The roll of the credits, life has ended. There is a next day. I do appreciate that. So when I go into this, I kind of look at the bigger picture of what this season was besides that. And it really kind of felt like it wasn't moving. It felt like it was spinning its wheels. It felt like this could have had... This kind of later choice could have been at the end of the second season, and I would have been perfectly fine with it. I do like some developments in there. I think a lot of the developments in this particular season was Iroha. I liked a lot of the interactions with this teacher. And there's quite a few scenes with Komachi, his little sister, kind of moving on into the next grade, which was fantastic, too, her moving on into high school. And I love that as well. But I think a lot of the things around Hachi, Yui, and Yukino kind of got stalled, and it felt like the writer really just was trying to drag things out in the end. So I still love the entire series as a whole. I will definitely be buying this Blu-ray and putting it with the other two in my set. I still love all these characters. I did actually get a lot more appreciation for Yukino than I had previously. I felt like a lot of the other characters that I love so much got zero time in the spotlight, which did kind of suck. But overall, it was a fantastic series. I'm kind of glad I've kind of concluded it and I can move on. I'll probably just chuck my light novels at this point, but because I was collecting those because I wasn't sure if they were going to adapt the rest of it. But yeah, it was a great series overall. If you have never watched Snafu, I definitely recommend it. It is odd looking back now because of how different the art style was in the first season compared to the rest of it. I kind of wish Phil will go back and readapt the first season just so that we kind of have one consistent art style across the board. But yeah, glad to see it finally over. Put a conclusion on it. I would like to see a university time frame spinoff for it, but as it stands now, it was kind of a well bookend series, and I appreciate the writer's decision. I don't agree with it. But we'll go with it. Yeah, that's my team romantic comedy Snafu climax.
His story to tell.
Yeah, like I said, I technically see that it is his character. He knows what his character wants. Obviously, it should have been the teacher. Yeah, ReZero, Starting Life in Another World, Season 2, technically Part 1. I don't know if they're going to call the next core Season 3. I do know that it was supposed to be split core. There will be a second half to this particular 13 episodes. I think they were putting it off until winter or something like that. But yeah, ReZero, Kara Hajimeru, Isekai, Sikatsu, second season. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll for 13 episodes. Studio was White Fox. Sources light novel, drama, fantasy, psychological, thriller are the genres. And for those who don't know, this one follows a guy named Subaru. And Subaru has been transported into another world. And he is a neet. Was a neet in his the modern times. Gets transported to this other world. Thinks that he's supposed to be the big hero of this isekai world. And he's going to have superpowers and save everybody. But he's actually just himself. And gets his butt kicked really early on. Ends up running into a girl named Amelia, who is a in the choices for this kind of selection between different women to be this next queen, because the royal family is, something's happened to the royal family that is supposed to be ruling this kingdom. And so there's kind of this selection that's coming that was kind of decreed by this dragon at some point. And yeah, but the weird thing is that Amelia is kind of the spitting image of this evil witch of the past that everybody is afraid of and detests because she did terrible things. And but Subaru loves her because she's an elf and she's beautiful. So he kind of risks everything to save her. The big twist here is, like I said before, he doesn't have any superpowers. He does have one ability, and it was given to him by this so-called witch, and is the what he calls return by death. Every time he dies, he gets taken back in time to a set period of time, almost like checkpoints, and he's able to kind of relive from that point on. While nobody remembers what happened, everything kind of gets reset at that point, he does remember. So that's kind of the quirk in this particular world, is that he is constantly trying to save those around him that he wants to protect, while at the same time, if anything happens and he dies, everything kind of gets reset. And then hopefully eventually he'll reach the next good point in time when it won't reset and he won't lose his progress, so to speak. Very gamifying kind of aspect, so... Yeah, outside of that, there is so many things to go through, but that's the gist of it. He eventually goes to the manor of Rosewald, who is currently kind of the person who is, I guess, taken Amelia as a candidate for this and helping her through the whole process, and the people of that manor, and then eventually getting into the cults that are trying to find Amelia, and... crazy whales. There was a whale moment, this big whale that was eating people's existence out of time and space and people's minds. Yeah. But this particular season kind of follows them going into the sanctuary, which is this location that Rosewald went to at some point. We kind of remember from the first season. And there they are trapped, and Subaru is trying to figure out how to get them out of there and back to the mansion, because he realized that something's happening at the mansion. And so he's kind of at this moment kind of stuck between two sides, one being the mansion, which is being attacked by what's her name? Crazy Elsa, the gut, the I like to see your insides lady. And the sanctuary, which is being kind of stuck in this issue with rabbits attacking. The whole thing with the trials that Amelia has to do, which are kind of messing with Amelia in order to get people out of there. So yeah, there's kind of two fronts that Subaru is kind of dealing with in this particular season, which I guess gets right into my first issue with this one, is a really bad stopping point. And that's what sucks, is like I knew that this was going to be the first half of the second season. Or at least I knew this was a single core to a two core story, possibly. I guess I technically can go three cores. But man, that stopping point sucked. It literally felt like a commercial break moment.
We were thinking that he was going to solve this situation literally like three or four episodes ago. It's been, he is literally in a no-win situation. He goes one route, he loses something valuable. If he goes the other route, he loses something valuable. And it's really, I mean, and you know what I'm talking about if you watch the show, what he considers valuable. And it's really, really frustrating. And getting to that stopping point, it was like, oh my gosh, we literally just kind of got to a point where we could almost see a possible light, but then we've been dragged on with a possible light at the end of the tunnel for the last four episodes, so it probably isn't even a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, I do want to do a spoiler discussion of this in a little bit, so keep that in mind. So doing no spoiler discussion of this particular season so far is biggest negative, of course, is the fact that it's a really crappy stop point. Not that it was a stop point like, you know, blood flies across the screen and we don't know what's going to happen next with this character. It was just kind of, like I said, it felt like a commercial break. Like, you would have this kind of, somebody pops out and says, man, you screwed up. Done. It's like, and? It's like, is it, wait, this is the last episode, isn't it? No, what? Is it? I counted the episodes like 15 times. Yes, 13. Is it? Yeah, that's 13. Wow, there? Really, there? At the same time, putting that aside, I think this was a great season overall. Like, it's not so much that I expect to get to the next point. It's that as long as there's reveals happening, I'm perfectly fine with this kind of aspect of Subaru running into a brick wall over and over again, because at least they're learning something new every time he finds that brick wall. Really getting into Rosewald and the Sanctuary, getting into
Beatrice, we dug into so all much kinds into
Beatrice.
Of stuff.
We finally got huge insights into Beatrice.
This was absolutely a treasure trove of
the
secrets.
Witches. We yeah. got into a lot of the witches. Not so much anything deep inside the character or anything in the backstories of the witches themselves, but really getting a viewpoint of the witches themselves and their personalities and their quirks. That was all great. My other big, huge negative. Knocking Rem out right off the bat. Dang it. And we didn't get to see any more Rem after that. That was a big negative. No Rem anywhere. No Rem. I forgot about that. I don't like this season. It's a terrible season. There. I said it. That's it. I'm done.
Well, I
and no my, Puck.
My
no
biggest
Puck. No Puck at all.
My biggest beef for this season is the fact that two characters that I did not want to see get injured got injured this season, and I did
it's
not like
literally
that.
It's going to be every season. Every season you're going to see characters you don't
want to
see.
This is a really, really hard show for me to watch, but I do enjoy it. It really is hard.
Yeah, a particular character's breakdown moment was very hard to watch. That's for sure. But yeah, like I said, and this is the struggle that I have. I know that a lot of people get frustrated with Subaru, and I've never had a problem with Subaru because at some point, I think in the Rem, the early Manor segments arc in the last season, I kind of took a vantage point of somebody looking at Subaru as a character that is human and does have a psychological aspect to him, and going through the gruesome things that he does is going to mess with him. I don't think anybody can relate to him in any way, shape, or form, because you have not been slaughtered to death over and over again. If you have, let me know how you pulled that off. So what he's going through is genuinely would mess with somebody. And so I've always kind of gone along with it whenever he does kind of have emotional breakdowns and tries to push himself out of those situations. So the reset's not so much of a bother for me. I do look forward to that moment that he does overcome this particular loop, obviously. But it is kind of okay for me just because of the reveals. And this season gave us such a plethora of reveals. Almost to the point where I felt like any of the big reveals and the resets in the first season... I feel cheapened out by those ones. Because I think the first season was a lot of questions brought up and very little answers given. And this particular season gave us a lot of answers to those questions, almost to the point where I almost feel like we're running out of those questions. I mean, I can still say that there's plenty of questions I can pose to the creator to want answers from, but I felt like he gave us a lot of answers this season. And I appreciate that. Even though I don't want all the answers to be given because I do lose that intrigue aspect. But it's been a lot of fun going along with the story and kind of getting these little bits of information here and there of things. I ran into a conversation about the with somebody's frustration in the first season. They were claiming that it was full of plot holes, which doesn't make sense to me because that would insinuate that the writer has no intention of telling you the answers to the questions that you want, so you're going to call them plot holes. And I never really felt like that. I felt like the story that he is...
How can you have a plot hole in something that's not completed yet?
Exactly. but yeah, if you looked at the first season as, this is a complete story, which has no indication whatsoever that this is a complete story, you could see that as being plot holes, but it still keeps going. And... yeah, technically, at some point, the writer could probably throw his hands up and say he's not going to answer any of those questions that he's posed in the first season, and that would be really frustrating, but he's not. He's answering those questions. It just took us a while to get there. He's going to tell us it, and now we're getting those answers, and it's like, give it to me. Just give it to me. Just give it to me. All these things I've been trying to speculate on for all this time, now I have the answers to it. Now I have the answers to them. Great. Give me the answer. And I do love when... as I'm going along and the answer's not quite there yet, and I figure it out. Like, there was one big reveal in this particular season. I called it pretty early, and I was really happy to kind of realize that I was right. Granted, you can speculate on a lot of things and eventually be right. I was really happy to kind of get that confirmation that, oh, yeah, that was true. That is what's going on with this particular situation. So, yeah, a lot of fun. I love the witches, even though I hate them at the same time. They're kind of dangerous. I think that they're very quirky, and I'm excited to kind of get more insights into them in the past. Hopefully eventually get like a little bit insight into, you know, their undoing that we get hinted at, would be great. So
I absolutely love the witches. I thought they were absolutely a blast.
Yeah. The tea party. Mm-hmm. Tea party. just don't drink the tea. Don't drink the tea. Yeah. So yeah, that's ReZero. Still fantastic. Still love it to death. And I am sad that it is going to be a while before we get any more, because that was a crappy drop-off point. That's the only real technically big bad I can give it, is that was a just commercial break, it's done kind of moment. So yep. Look forward to more of that. Sword Online, Alicization, War of Underworld Part 2. This is the part two of the War of the Underworld series, which is supposed to be the end of Sword Art Online, right? Yeah. So this one streamed on Crunchyroll for 11 episodes. Studio was A1 Pictures. Sources: light novel. Genres: action, game, adventure, romance, fantasy. And I don't know why anybody would not know the plot line to this whole thing, but technically a guy goes to a VR world with a lot of other people. They get trapped in there. If they die in the game, they die in real life because the VR thing zaps their brains and kills them. If they die in the game, eventually they beat the game.
And that was 7 years ago.
Yeah. They eventually beat the game and are freed from that VR world. And then they take the seed of that particular, the original world, and they spread it across the world and make tons of different games out of it that anybody can log into. I don't know why you would log into after that whole thing happened, but they do. Yeah. Kito like starts getting into more science about that kind of stuff because he's likes that kind of stuff, and he gets a job working on that kind of stuff. At some point, we get a reveal of this one group of really bad PKers from that original world that were killing people in that game, which were essentially
killing
them.
They couldn't let it go.
they apparently went off to have like regular jobs, but they still kept trying to kill people because I guess you get that thirst and get that in your system. There's a laughing coffin. At some point, another one of those guys shows up and checks Kirito with some kind of coma-inducing drugs. And he gets thrown in some... he gets taken in by the people that he was working with on this VR technology. And they stick him in this underworld, which is this kind of world where this particular group is trying to, I guess, essentially birth souls by creating people from in this digital world and raising them from, or creating like the super AI by actually having the AI be born, have real world experiences in this kind of VR or this kind of digital world, and then stick them into actual machines and use them in, you know, it's always comes down to the military. One focus being Alice, which is this knight of this kingdom in this particular world they created, and Kirito in a comatose state. In order to save him, they stick him into this machine and let him, you know, keep his mind, I guess, awake in this particular world. And then he is essentially dropped in that world. He doesn't know anything about his previous life because this taps into what they call the Fluck Light, which they are kind of describing as the human soul that's in the brain. And the way that makes that so, I guess, immersive is the fact that they don't really have any recollection of the fact that they're in a game. And so he's kind of in this world as a person, goes to an academy. Yeah, well, he meets Yuzhou. I forgot to mention that. Best boy Yuzhou joins an academy and then realizes how evil and corrupt the world is. That the leader lady of it is kind of bad, and they go and try to overtake it because Alice is in there and trapped. And it comes all the way to this particular season, which is where, yeah, Laughing Coffin again. Well, one Laughing Coffin and some crazy psycho guy that apparently when he was a kid stabbed some poor little girl in the ear and killed her, and now he's kind of like fascinated with killing things. I don't know. He was weird. A bad man is with this mercenary group that is trying to steal this AI, which is Alice. And so they go into that world to try to capture her digital self and take it to this console to inject it into a cube to take it out of the world and then use that in drones or something and sell it for military purposes. I don't know. Yeah, Kirito, of course, in that world. He gets zapped somehow. So he was out of commission for most of the last, like, two cores. So a lot of it's been all the girls finally showing up, jumping into this world, and taking out the bad guys and Laughing Coffin people. And then they started injecting China, all the China players, apparently. Somehow they sent out a big, massive email to tell people to download a game and jump in there because there's evil Japanese hackers destroying a server. So they all joined because they want to stop the evil Japanese hackers and PK them, which is bad because they're actually living beings in that world. But yeah.
Mercenary bad man hires Laughing Coffin and Death Gun.
And then brings in a bunch of Chinese.
Brings in the Chinese peoples.
Now, see, if it was like a Dota game, I can understand. Then they'd be coming in there and wrecking all them up. But, yeah. Anyways. Yeah, your thoughts on the conclusion of Sword Art Online. Technically, the... Like I've joked about before, I don't think we're ever going to see an end to Sword Art Online. It's a cash cow. But I do see this being technically a conclusion of the Alicization stuff. So what are your thoughts of the conclusion of Alicization?
I thought it did fine. There's a lot of stuff that I wish kind of got done a little bit more of. The war itself felt a little bit... It was almost like it was rushed, and at the same time, it was like, I'm so glad this is over when it was all said and done. Because
we had like a whole core of the war.
Yeah, basically. It's
all of the first part was that war.
It's frustrating because I loved it and hated it at the same time because it didn't feel like it was a resolution to anything.
There will always be more Laughing Coffins. It's never going to be over.
Yeah, so there's always going to be more Laughing Coffins. It banked on the idea of that there's two sides of every story, and yet it was so ambiguous that even when the characters finally realized that they didn't really hate each other as much as they thought they did. You had already wiped out most of the the races per se. And it was really kind of frustrating to see kind of that kind of a resolution. It didn't have time to work with any of the characters on the other side. And that was, to me, quite a frustration.
Mass slaughter. Let's have babies.
Let's have babies.
I love, like, the random out of nowhere. I wish we had kids together. Like, what the hell? Love on the blossoming on the battlefield.
There was a lot of stuff that it was like, you're taking for granted too much. And it just came off as very frustrating. So in some respects, I loved it. Some respects, I hated it. It was just more of the story that I wanted to see. So I can't wait until the next part so that we can see whatever new thing, that new Laughing Coffin person that Kirito is going to meet.
I loved
Alicization. There's probably a fourth death gun.
I loved Alicization overall, because I thought it was a great little kind of reset to everything. Like I mentioned earlier, it was with the fact that Kirito being put into this one and him not having like a previous life recollection, it helped us kind of develop a new setting and really kind of dive into this particular world, get into this world, get new characters into it. It was a great thing that it wasn't so focused on the harem anymore. And he wasn't always surrounded by girls, and so you had this kind of, you know, Yuzhio Kirito bro kind of thing going on, and they're going off to school and taking down the system, so to speak. And I loved it. I thought it was a great reset to it, and I think I've always liked Kirito as a character. When it really gets into him and him wanting to develop, you know, the VR stuff for medical purposes and really trying to get in technology, he is himself as a good character. It's just he's unfortunately at the center of this issue that a lot of people have with the Sword Online series, is this kind of all these, you know, panting dogs around him wanting the biscuit, and they're never getting the biscuit. So it was nice to kind of get away from that and kind of go into this world. I thought it was a really cool world. I liked Alice. I liked all the knights, and they had great stories to all the knights as well. And I thought the kind of the build up to the war itself was fine. I thought it was all well put together, even though at this point it's a joke with us anymore, as I'm sick of the Laughing Coffin thing and that getting brought up every 2 seconds. And it was even more exhausting to kind of see that they had like this random mercenary group, and oh, by the way, one of them happened to have been in that VR world. What are the chances of that? And he's one of the Laughing Coffin guys too, and somehow he's here. You know, when he's off being a mercenary killing for money, he apparently pops on a VR and jumps into video games every now and then. I don't know. So that is kind of getting exhausting there, but I think my only issue really, because I did enjoy the first part of this, particularly the War of the Underworld, because it was a lot of cool spectacle, crazy action scenes, the usual audio, the sound director just making your speakers sound like they want to, you know, die a horrible death every time something goes off. But I think I kind of got over it at some point in this particular core. I just don't think that this particular core was at all the best. I did like to have a conclusion, everything, but I think everything from most of the part from the beginning of this particular core to kind of the resolve of the underworld, for the most part, I was kind of checked out. I just really wasn't caring much for it. I was getting more frustrated, if anything, like randomly out of nowhere, crazy import of thousands and thousands and thousands of Chinese gamers suddenly pop in and want to kill the Japanese gamers. And then the whole, I guess he has the power to control people because he's got an admin account, I guess. And okay.
That was stupid. Why did you have to remind me of that?
I just at some point was kind of like, yeah, okay, everybody's logging in with admin accounts and we'll see what happens, at the very end of it.
That one was absolutely stupid. It was like, not so much that he had the ability to control all these characters, but what's the point in bringing in the characters in the first place if you can just, you know, run a whole bunch of accounts? But okay, let's give you that you can't actually control random players. then that means that you're controlling their minds. Literally.
He wasn't upload of his actual Sword Online character, so it wasn't that he was an admin account. So, yeah, not sure how he got the mind controlling. There's a lot of points in this I would say last two cores that it was kind of like, yeah, okay, we'll go along with this, I guess.
It was just generally, I don't want to say it was bad. Like I said, and maybe that was just me grasping at straws, and I really, really wanted development on literally any of these characters, because it just felt like there was so much wasted potential there, especially with a lot of the characters on the other side, per se.
It was developments. Two people wanted to have a baby together. There's a lot of development there. And I'll give my thoughts on the very end of it. I think I got a fun discussion I want to do a little quickly after, in the spoiler segment for it. But I'm always, and that's the thing, even its worst moments when I have to kind of roll my eyes at a particular choice of something happening, or like I said before, here's Laughing Coffin again, and apparently him uploading his character allows him to control the minds of thousands of Chinese players. That randomly somehow managed to create accounts and jump into this world really well. That I'm stop. Where did they get the characters from? I don't know, because with everybody else, they had to choose to upload their character in there and possibly lose their character forever. But apparently, out of nowhere, China can make 50 million knight characters with the same armor to teleport into the world and fight. But and they try to redeem a character. I didn't like that. Didn't like that at all. Bukali had a great moment. Love his character always. Anyways, yeah. But in the end, it's like it's more Sword Online, which I've always enjoyed and will continue to enjoy. And granted, like I said, because of the fact that we've been kind of invested for so long in it, it probably makes it more able to forgive just kind of why moments. So keep that in mind. But I think it was a solid ending to it, and I really did overall enjoy the Alicization arc. It is definitely still like second to Mother Rosario. Obviously, I think Mother Rosario is still probably never going to get defeated. And we had cameos from like the movie.
Yeah.
At some point, I think they were just like, whatever, throw everything at it. It's the last season. And at some point, I'm like, is that is the characters from the, why the hell are they here? Kind of semi-spoiler, but yeah, there you go. So yeah, that's Sword Online, Alicization, War of the Underworld, Part 2. At this point, you're either watching or not. I don't know even why we're doing a review of it, other than to say that we watched it and what our immediate thoughts are, so. Yeah, with that, that's all the shows for this particular part of the summer 2020 anime season reviews. Again, we'll have a second parter, which currently have in the docket for it, Rent a Girlfriend, Uzaki-chan Wants to Hang Out, Millionaire Detective Balance Unlimited, Hero HX Eros, Monster Girl Doctor, Dairy of Our Day, Diary of Our Days at the Breakwater, Umayon. We'll do a little quick discussion on Fire Force second season, which is going into its end of first core. And we obviously have Fruits Basket second season coming to conclusion, which thankfully we have the final season already announced for it. So apparently it's going to be 3 seasons long, unless it's a 3 core season. It could be. Who knows? I'm going to see if The Great Pretender is going to possibly have its second core put on Netflix before the end of next week. I don't think so. I think they only have the first core on there at the moment, but I really do want to watch that. I already did a quick review of Japan Sinks 2020, which is in a mini episode, which we'll post eventually. I think that's pretty much all I'm looking at right now. I kind of wanted to go back to the weird idol show, but I don't know if I will. Is there anything that you dropped off on that you're trying to pick back up?
I don't remember. I thought about asking you what shows that we had that got dropped off that we didn't.
My Love, Queen's Choice, Ninja Collecting, Jibate, Those are all pretty much pretty boy shows, I think. Lapis Relights was the one I might go back to. There was a second thing of No Guns Life, but that's pretty much it. We pretty much covered most all of the season, so. But it was a very much smaller season than most, so it was much easier to keep up on. Which next season is not going to be, so come pretty much, yeah, pretty much starting, I think, tomorrow, we're going to start getting the next season flooding in, floodgates open, so. Yeah, with that said, we hope you guys enjoyed this run-through of reviews. We'll talk a little bit. I kind of had a couple things to talk about with ReZero, Sword Online, and maybe Snafu in the spoiler segment, so. If you guys wish to hear spoilers on those, definitely listen to us after the music rolls. But for everybody that is not wanting to get any kind of spoilers, we thank you all for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed. Again, we're at talkspear.com. That's where you can go for all of our anime, new and old. Great community forums at the top. Social media links on the right side. All that good stuff. And you all take care.
Os.
Alright, again, super spoileries here. I guess I technically don't. Well, I guess to give my. I pretty much already opened up on the Snafu stuff, so I don't really. I think most people already know. That's why I gave a pretty moderate spoiler beginning there, because I think most people know that I love Yui Wakahama. So I don't think it's very. You pretty much got my thoughts if you know what my thoughts are on the characters themselves. So I don't really think that there's any kind of things to really get into there, because you pretty much got my full thoughts. I did appreciate at the very end, though, they kind of, again, this is spoiler for Snafu Climax. I did appreciate, and I kind of mentioned this stuff to Chris because I figured he was never going to watch it anyways, because there's literally like three extremely well animated scenes of Yui Yugahama crying her eyes out, which is nothing he wants to watch. I did appreciate that at the very, I think it was the last episode, they had this moment where Iroha comes up to Yui Yugahama and Hachiman's sister's there, and Iroha kind of lays out the idea of, like, all you gotta do is wait for 3 years, you can get him drunk, make him do something that he'll have to take responsibility for. So it was kind of like one of those ones where, like, wow, that's a pretty interesting way of basically saying this isn't over yet, essentially.
Love is war.
Which is funny, because the sister totally pointed out that Iroha was, since Iroha is 1 age younger than him, or 1 year younger than them, that would be how long she would have to wait till she can drink. So basically she was telling Yui Yugahama her plans, which could mean her plans for getting Hayato, but I think it was more laying on Hachiman, because Iroha, I haven't even seen her talk about Hayato in forever, so she obviously is after Hachiman as well. So yeah, that was about the only thing that kind of pulled out that distaste that I had, I guess. Like I said, I don't really necessarily hate Yukino. I just never really got their relationship. And I think the thing that the writer was really trying to drive home was this aspect of, we don't really get an idea of their relationship because they both have the same problem. They both have an issue with communication, which is completely spelled out for us when, in their confession scene, they both really don't even say that they love the other person. They just somehow communicate through gibberish between the two of them that they want to spend the rest of their life with each other. So, and that was kind of cute. So I'll go with it. But, yeah, that's about it. That's about all I'm going to say. Yu Yu Gahama got robbed. That's all I got to say is Yu Yu Gahama got robbed. I'll ship Yui and Iroha. There you go. I really started liking Iroha. Well, I liked Iroha early on as well, but yeah. ReZero. Yeah, I love the witches. They were great. And I think the thing I like so much about the witches is that they don't really necessarily, they don't seem like they personify what they are very well. Like, Wrath fixes things by destroying them. Carmilla Lust, she doesn't really necessarily seem like she's a very forward person. She's very reserved.
Well, and that's the funny thing is like Ikidana is technically greed, and yet she's the least greedy. She's constantly offering things out. Have some tea. Have some of the I know you make your joke about the tea again. But she's constantly giving things away, and it's so funny because although they seem like they're opposites, when they do actually there's nuance to each one of these characters. So in all actuality, Ekidana is the entire time she's trying to take Subaru away from Ilya or Emilia. EMT.
EMD, yeah.
But yeah, so that's the one thing that I do find kind of fascinating about these characters is while their outside persona is the opposite, in the nuance to their character, you can see their internal motivations is always the opposite, where they are actually portraying their whatever it is. So like Minerva, she is bombastic, doesn't seem wrathful at all, and then she randomly turns around and says, "This is making me mad," and stuff like that. So yeah.
Yeah, it seems like somewhere in there the element is there. Like Daphne's all about eating. She's like, I just want people to be happy by eating. And that was kind of an interesting thing that that you can kind of see is that it almost seems like everything that they do is for the benefit of somebody. But to do that, they cause destruction. So it kind of really, it makes you wonder. And that was where I was really kind of hitting with the, in the review section, was kind of like, I want to see like the past. I want to see them in their time before they were taken down by Satala. Because I'm curious of how this world functioned with their existence. Because obviously, Daphne wanted everybody to have food. So what'd she do? She made a bunch of unending bunnies and a gigantic whale. She's like, that would feed everybody. Obviously, that's a good thing. Aren't people happy? He's like, yeah, but they're eating everybody. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, but if they get hungry, they're going to want to eat, right? They're going to be starving too, so why wouldn't they want to eat too? She doesn't understand. She's like, obviously people want to eat, and they'll be happy when they eat. Again, with Minerva, I can totally see her trying to fix things for people, but she'd be destroying things at the same time in order to do that. And that's where I'm kind of really curious. I mean, what would Pride do? And what disassembling things
Pride
by
is
touching
awesome.
It?
Best witch, Pride.
yeah, Tama. But yeah, it's like it seems like I think Sloth was the only one that actually seemed like, well, Sloth and Gluttony, I think technically pretty well indicated their particular sins. I guess technically with Ekidona she did as well, because it obviously at some point revealing that the library was her, she's trying to seek out all this information and knowledge that she can possibly can. And that was really cool, because I'm glad that I kind of caught on to the fact that I knew that library was going to end up being Ekidona's. I think it was the moment when they kind of revealed Ruzu being kind of like these clones of these remanufactured beings that they were trying to put Ekidona into. And it kind of all started connecting from that point on. Like, oh yeah, Beatrice obviously did this. The library is Ekidona's. Rosewall's there because he obviously loved Ekidona, possibly. all the pieces again started kind of fitting together, and I'm like, I love this. I love that we're finally starting to get the answers. And I think that the one that frustrated me the most though was that the moment that it was a comment that Elsa made about Beatrice being a sacrifice, and I'm like, oh, dang it! I knew it, or I didn't know it. That was the point in which I kind of realized I bet Rosewald is behind all this crap, and now I'm really angry because I knew Rosewald was a bad person. It's just, it sucks when
I don't know that I would call him a bad guy. I would put him.
He's sacrificing everybody to push Subaru.
Right?
How he's not a bad guy? He's had.
It depends on your definition of bad guy. He's
one that gets people killed.
I'll go with that. But when it comes down to it,
killed Rem, killed Ram, killed Emilia. Let's see what else. It killed. What's her name? Presh. Petra. Petra. Kill the village. Beatrice died because of him.
Okay, hold on. Let me finish my statement.
Okay, he likes people that kill cute girls, apparently. Everything you hate about this season was because of Roswell.
I agree, okay?
He stabbed Ram through the chest.
The frustrating thing is, by just defining him as bad guy, you're stripping him of all the nuance involved in that character.
No,
and that's the fascinating thing. That's the fascinating thing about a good writer, is that you don't know his ultimate motivations outside of he's trying to do something for Emilia. Now, we don't know if...
No, I haven't gotten that yet.
He said that he's doing this for Emilia, to spur Subaru into understanding that his ultimate motivation is Emilia. That's what he said. If he doesn't... That was that entire scene.
No, he never specifically said it was for him. He was doing it for Emilia. He was specifically at that time saying that he was trying to make Subaru become like him and focus on one thing, which was Emilia. But it was never stated that this whole purpose was for Emilia. My reasoning for correcting that or stating that my perspective on how that was said is because at this point, I don't know if his whole point is to make Subaru into something that he thinks Subaru can become, or if he still cares about trying to do something for Emilia, because he's sacrificed Emilia before.
Right.
So I think his intent, he's never sacrificed Subaru. He's beat the crap out of him because he, of course, obviously the offset to that is that technically he could be only focusing on Subaru because he knows Subaru can fix it and he knows Subaru can reset it. So he's okay with taking out Emilia at any point.
Yeah. That's my thing is His entire motivation is to refine Subaru so that he can better take care of Emilia. That's the impression that I got. Now, yeah, the way he's looking at it is sacrificing a pawn to upgrade the queen. That's the way he's looking at it. Does that necessarily make him evil or bad? No, not necessarily. I think his motivation is still to be revealed. I agree. I don't like him right now because he's irritating and he's killing off a lot of characters that I like. But at the same time, technically, we don't know his ultimate motivation. That's the problem with the chaos characters per se. You don't know if they're technically being chaotic good or being chaotic evil,
but still a bad person. I am curious because it is cool that we technically haven't had his entire card hand revealed. What we do know is that he liked Echidona. We do know that he hates the dragon. We do know he's helping Emilia to be a part of this selection that was decreed by the dragon, which that is a big question mark in itself. Does he blame the dragon for what happened to Echidona? Is that why he's angry? There's still so many questions still up there. But like I mentioned earlier in the review, is that I'm more comfortable with I guess allowing myself to wait for the writer to reveal it to me, now that I know that the writer is willing to tell me, reveal things to me, I guess. Because, to be honest, with the first season, there's a lot of questions being created, and there is a side of me that also kind of thinks, well, he could possibly never answer any of these. Is he just going to create the questions just to kind of leave the world open to intrigue? And I'm fine with them not revealing everything, because then I still have intrigue going forward, trying to get the answers on why exactly Roswald is doing what he's doing. Because obviously he does have his reasoning for what he's doing. It's just, is he going to be able to... Yeah, technically, to your point, is he going to reveal it well enough that it's going to make me go, I would do the same thing? It would obviously be the big question mark there. But... it doesn't make him any less of an evil person to me at the moment, just because of what he's put people through. Especially without him fully understanding what Subaru is doing is a big question mark. And even more detrimental with this particular season is kind of, I guess, revealing to Subaru that... Not revealing to him, but Echidona technically presenting to Subaru the idea of him not... allowing himself to get dead ends very well because of the possibility that life can go on without him and the people being left behind by his decisions, which was, I think, the first time we were ever really gotten that perspective. Again, it was technically fabricated by Echidona, but it was a possibility that it was presenting it in a way that is a possibility. Like, you could have killed yourself and life went on. And I thought that was pretty... kind of significant, I guess, to him going forward. Is I think every now and then he does have those moments where he realizes he's doing it wrong and he needs to kind of backtrack. There was a big point in which he realized that he had to, with the whale, at some point he had to realize he had to rely on other people. He had to grovel to get an army together in order to fight, rather than him trying to do it himself. He tried to avoid it. He tried to do it himself. All those things kind of failed until he got put people out there and said, hey, I need your help, and went in there with a group. This is kind of the moment where he kind of... And I think he's getting back to that. I think he's going to come back to that aspect of trying to rely on people. He kind of jumped to it pretty early on with this particular arc and trying to rely on other people, and it blew up in his face. And I think he's gone back to trying to do it on his own again. And he's going to have to go back to rely on people again in order to kind of move forward. So, yeah, it's been a pretty awesome season. I think the Tea Party was a huge part of it, because I think up until this point it was really hard to kind of really gauge what were the witches. And like, early on we thought that Betelgeuse was Sloth and he was like a personification of that witch, and then now we're kind of getting this idea of the almost apprentices or whatever. What was the term that we were using?
Avatars
of these particular types, not really necessarily the... and having, like, the gluttony showing up, hate him because he messed up Rem. Rigulus was weird. I wanted to see more of Rigulus. So, yeah, that's about it. All I want to talk about it. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up?
No.
ReZero, Sword Online, but the only thing I really want to talk about was the very end. No, I kind of mentioned I don't know if I mentioned on the podcast at all, but I did kind of hint at the idea that there was a gap in time, which I can totally see in the writer. I would like the writer to make the 200 years segment, making a story on that, how Kito and Asuna became the king and queen and built the nation afterwards. I think that would be cool, because I think that, again, that was a segment of time that I really liked. And I think having them away from everybody else and them just being alone together, raising up a kingdom, would be pretty cool. But man, that very end part, like I was laughing because I told Chris, I'm like, okay, they specifically said Alice's sister went into a cryostatic freeze kind of thing to wait for her. So it makes sense that when they return there, her sister's going to be there, same age. But then you had like the two cadet girls from the academy show up in spaceship rocket jet things going out into outer space, and I'm like,
and I'm fighting a man of war, is that what? Or
it was like a gazer looking thing. Yeah, I'm like, I was fine with the gazer flying through, but then suddenly out of nowhere we have crazy jets flying into space and they're flying past, and it has the cat. And I was like, well, maybe it's just the scent. No, they know who they are. They literally are the two girls. How did they last this long? They figure out how to make themselves. I'm guessing they probably figured out a way to make themselves immortal or something, or not age. But I was like, okay, okay. But it just kind of opened up the question of, like, are they going to do, like, some crazy, I don't know, Phantasy Star-esque type of world going forward that they can mess around in that's kind of evolved to the state that it did?
That would make sense to me.
And it's not that I expected them, because it does imply technically that, okay, there was the 200 years. So the time between Kirito waking up after those 200 years up until the point that they get told to come back to it because somebody's calling them there, could that be another jump of 200 years or so? We don't know.
I don't know.
So, yeah, that was interesting. That was interesting. And I was also questioning the idea that when they had that brief moment of, like, we gotta shut this thing down in 10 minutes, otherwise, or we can shut down this time speed up in 10 minutes, which will end up being 200 years in the world. And then they had, like, a jump scene to, like, Alice being told that Kirito has wakened up or something like that. I'm like, that was, like, literally probably several days later. But then I'm, like, realizing, well, they could have shut down the speed up in 10 minutes, and then they finally got him to wake up after that. So that's not necessarily a plot hole. But, yeah, not enough Elizabeth. So it was a terrible season.
My poor Silica just got forgotten about.
We were joking about the fact that even Klein had a dramatic entrance into the world of the underworld. With Silica and Elizabeth, they just kind of, like, they get no grand entrance. They just kind of show up.
Hey, at least Elizabeth got the really cool speech. Silica didn't even get that.
She did have a speech moment. Yeah, Silica didn't, yeah. This sucks. Oh. Yeah. Hopefully that's the end of the Hyphen Coffins. Probably not. Yeah, Quinella, they tried to redeem her at some point. I guess technically they try to redeem her quite a while back when they kind of explain her long lineage of being in that world, but yeah, I wasn't going with it. And yeah, Sketa and Iskan were the two that was saying her, like, having a baby on the battlefield, apparently. It was cute, but still. I didn't know. No. Yeah, well, that's it, though. Until Progressive, we'll get to go right back to the ex-girlfriend. And I'm curious to see how well they do with Progressive. See how, if that does change it enough that maybe it might actually stop the hatred for the series. Probably not. All right, that's it. That's all we're going to go through for spoiler discussions. I just wanted to tap on a couple things really quickly before we signed out for it. So we hope you guys enjoy this run through of the spoilers for Summer 2020. And y'all take care.
Oos. Moment.